don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Crypto Economy Quick Read. What is up, crew? Welcome back to the show. We have got section 6 today of the amazing iterative capital thesis on the cryptocurrency phenomenon, and it is titled How Value Accrues in Proof-of-Work Networks. So don't forget to go back and listen to, this has now been 7 parts, this will be part 8 of this series here, so obviously you're jumping right in towards the end of this whole thesis if you have not listened to those episodes. So make sure you go back and listen to parts 1 through 7. But this is talking about the developer and hardware draw and how you have the feedback loops involved in the development and incentives and value accrual of the asset, and then expansion onto different hardware platforms and all kinds of really cool stuff that goes on in the incentive structure and the system of Bitcoin and how its software works. So this is a really, really fun piece or a really fun section of this. And without further ado, let's go ahead and jump into it. I just do want to say first, don't forget to swap your Amazon link if you have not done so. I've had a number of clicks on that, so it seems like some of you guys are actually doing that. That's exciting. Thank you for doing that. But if you want the Amazon affiliate link to support this show, you just go to cryptoeconomy.life, and it's right up there at the top of the page. All right, guys, let's go ahead and jump into Section 6, How Value Accrues in Proof-of-Work Networks. Considering the outcomes of Bitcoin's incentive structure and the levers that control them. Quote, Unix and C are the ultimate computer viruses, end quote. Richard P. Gabriel, 1983. The next two sections, 6 and 7, inquire how Bitcoin, a free software project built by hackers, can compete with mature and powerful fiat currency-based financial systems, which are increasingly digital, and what this competition will look like. First, we will discuss how Bitcoin-like projects grow differently than commercial software companies, and in Section 7, we will assess their impact if successful. What qualities cause cryptocurrency systems to grow in value? In the paragraphs ahead, we summarize 5 surprising and counterintuitive insights which count as, quote, common sense for the most knowledgeable cryptocurrency hackers. We have established that free open-source software built in New Jersey style has rapidly outstripped commercial competitors at the foundations of the web. We can separate the source of the benefits of this approach to software building into 2 categories, developer draw and hardware draw. 1. Developer draw. Here we use the term developer draw to mean an open source project which is operationally healthy and attractive to developers who might contribute. When a project has high developer draw, skilled individuals happily volunteer time, energy, ideas, bug fixes, and computing resources to a project. Satoshi Nakamoto envisioned Bitcoin as a platform for private economic activity, maintained by loose groups of volunteers. Platforms are most useful when they are stable. Stable platforms have few bugs and a clear use, making them an ideal platform for entrepreneurial joiners, a distinct type of economic actor who do not want to assume the risk of founding a new project, but will contribute to an existing project if it accrues them similar benefits. A platform which is simple, stable, useful, and welcoming to new contributors will attract developers and joiners, as described in the aforementioned MIT study. Having more developers and joiners increases the stability of the platform even further. The thesis that, given enough eyeballs, all bugs are shallow, is known as Linus's Law after the creator of Linux. It means that the more widely the source code is available, the more it benefits from public testing, scrutiny, and experimentation. These activities result in stable software. In a private company building proprietary code, the momentous task of debugging falls on the few developers that have access to the code base. For an open allocation project like Bitcoin, there is huge benefit in attracting an infinite number of eyeballs, but only as long as there is a mechanism in place to prevent spurious changes that create time-wasting busy work for other contributors. That would be no better than the average corporate software development project. Bitcoin's incentive system allows the best of both worlds. Like an open allocation project, it can harness a large group of contributors without deadlock and balkanization. Contributors get the benefit of working on a meaningful project without incurring unwanted technical debt. Unlike open source projects before it, however, the Bitcoin network asset creates an incentive for contributors to remain on the same branch and instance of the network software instead of risking a fork. While a fork is an easy way to end a technical argument between contributors, in a network with an asset, forks have an implicit economic threat. They may be perceived by the market as making the platform less stable and therefore less valuable, pushing down the price of the network asset. Like a commercial company, Bitcoin's organizational structure incentivizes contributors to work out their differences and keep the group intact for everyone's financial gain. Thus, Bitcoin is the first free, non-commercial software project with the intensity of a commercial product. Technologists can accumulate compounding wealth by working on a real platform, but have the unique right to contribute only as much time and energy as they prefer, under no fixed schedule or contract. Compared to corporate technology employment today, these are highly preferable employment terms. 2. Hardware draw. We use the term hardware draw as a general metric of machine accessibility. Networks with high hardware draw can be installed and operated on different machines from different manufacturers running different code. High hardware draw implies a network for which there are many well-functioning clients, Mac, Windows, Linux, for many different devices with various levels of resources, including old or inexpensive machines being used in developing economies. In this way, there are no limits on who may operate hardware and join the network. The concept of hardware draw has its roots in New Jersey-style viral software, which prioritizes low resource use so as to be compatible with many older or cheaper computers. Emphasis added. Quote, "The worse is better philosophy means that implementation simplicity has highest priority, which means Unix and C are easy to port on such machines. Therefore, one expects that if the 50% functionality Unix and C support is satisfactory, then they start to appear everywhere. And they have, haven't they? Unix and C are the ultimate computer viruses." End quote. In Bitcoin, transactions contain small amounts of data, and its blockchain grows slowly. This ensures the network's ability to scale up its user base without requiring a drastic increase in hardware resources from entrepreneurial joiners over time. As a peer-to-peer network, if Bitcoin generated data at a high rate, the requirements would increase for individual users, reducing hardware draw. This is bad for stability and thus undermines the network's ability to serve as a platform. Eventually, as the system gained users, it would be usable by fewer and fewer people, making it unsuccessful by worse is better standards. High levels of hardware draw are reflected in a low barrier to entry for joiners who seek to build a service on top of the network, use a wallet application, or run a full node. They can do so without needing to purchase or configure specialized hardware. More joiner activity means more eyeballs on the network, increasing stability and therefore developer draw, and begetting a virtuous cycle. Conversely, a system which starts out with low hardware draw, requiring fast, expensive computers to run, may never reach an adequate population of users. Quote, once the virus is spread, there will be pressure to improve it, possibly by increasing its functionality closer to 90%, but users have already been conditioned to accept worse than the right thing. Therefore, the worse is better software first will gain acceptance, second will condition its users to expect less, and third will be improved to a point that it is almost the right thing. End quote. Once a native program spreads, it becomes harder to change. Each individual user must upgrade to realize changes. Furthermore, an over-reliance on upgrading the software later will result in technical debt, as some users fail to upgrade, and developers feel pressure to continue to support these old versions of the software. Thus, New Jersey style also dictates that, quote, it is important to remember that the initial virus has to be basically good. If so, the viral spread is assured as long as it is portable, end quote. Comments from Nakamoto on June 17, 2010 imply that the challenge of Bitcoin was designing a network which would have high developer draw and high hardware draw, but still achieve, quote, functionality closer to 90% of what people would want in a currency system, right off the bat. Quote, the nature of Bitcoin is such that once version 0.1 was released, the core design was set in stone for the rest of its lifetime. Because of that, I wanted to design it to support every possible transaction type I could think of. The problem was, each thing required special support code and data fields, whether it was used or not, and only covered one special case at a time. It would have been an explosion of special cases. The solution was script, which generalizes the problem so transacting parties can describe their transaction as a predicate that the node network evaluates. The nodes only need to understand the transaction to the extent of evaluating whether the sender's conditions are met. Future versions can add templates for more transaction types, and nodes running that version or higher will be able to receive them. The design supports a tremendous variety of possible transaction types that I designed years ago. Escrow transactions, bonded transactions, third-party arbitration, multi-party signature, etc. If Bitcoin catches on in a big way, these are things we'll want to explore in the future, but they all had to be designed at the beginning to make sure they would be possible later. End quote. This uncompromising but somewhat extensible design rationale makes Bitcoin viral and also useful to a broad base of potential users. Developer draw drives hardware draw. Hackers enjoy writing software and will work on a network protocol before it is launched and before its coins have any value. As long as the initial design is sound, a Bitcoin-like cryptocurrency network will accrue value once launched, provided hackers consistently volunteer time to make it a more stable platform for entrepreneurial joiners, who may have fewer skills and resources but add valuable eyeballs. Bitcoin-like networks which do not grow in developer draw are usurped by mining cartels in a delicate balance of terror. This means that in projects where developer draw is high, diverse contributors improve the underlying system, building and testing client applications on a broad base of hardware and software platforms. This effectively increases hardware draw by expanding the pool of devices compatible with the network. Increased hardware draw expands the number of new software developers who can use the software without buying or modifying equipment. This virtuous cycle begins with developer draw. Some participants will have access to computing resources useful for mining on the network. Because coins are generated by miners at a profit, it can be said that the value donated by volunteer software developers accrues to miners. As more miners join the network to profit, it becomes harder for any one miner to gain control of the network, preventing a head of the network from forming, which a regulator or a saboteur might chop off or corrupt. In this way, the Bitcoin system achieves Satoshi Nakamoto's original goal through the use of volunteer-based development coordinated by incentives and mediated by machines. The enrichment of miners is a trade-off, which is acceptable to the contributors only when they enjoy the contribution. If contributions are difficult or unpleasant, developer draw drops. Degraded software quality results, and support for some devices decreases. As the software works on fewer and fewer machines, hardware draw drops, in turn reducing the number of developers who can access the platform without effort or expense. This is a vicious cycle. When it occurs, the largest or wealthiest miners may consolidate or cartelize, giving them control over the network. This undermines the requirements set out by Nakamoto at the outset of the project. Summary. In this section, we have distilled the common sense benefits of Bitcoin's incentive system. We have elucidated how it uses lessons gained from hacker-style software development to create a project which is highly satisfying for software developers to contribute to. And we have established that this satisfaction produces subtle development improvements which ultimately increase the value of the network. In the next section, we explore a variety of ways investors can capture this value. All right, and that will conclude Section 6 of the Iterative Capital Thesis. We have one more episode of this, guys. We got Section 7, closing this incredible piece out with the investment outlook, Section 7. And Section 7 is quite a bit longer than Section 6. Section 6 obviously was a pretty short one. But don't forget to check out iterative.capital. They have very regular posts about things that's going on in the cryptocurrency space, and tons of stuff to read, research and analysis going on in the space. In fact, the one they posted today, Leo Zhang posted one today, is Bitcoin still digital gold or something else entirely? I have not dug into it yet, but it looks like an interesting discussion. So at least that title has gotten me want to dig in a little bit further. So definitely check out iterative.capital or follow Iterative Cap at Iterative Cap on Twitter. And we will be jumping right back into this tomorrow with Section 7. Don't forget to follow me at The Crypto Economy on Mastodon, on Twitter, on Medium, all those places. You can find all those links at cryptoeconomy.life. You can check out the subreddit r/cryptoeconomy, or I'm trying to get my Instagram up and running to post maybe mostly the videos on there, because I have the one video so far. I just started my channel here. The one video on the Casa node, setting it up and configuring your router. So if you've gotten your Casa node recently, I suggest starting there just in case you don't know the specifics of port forwarding and all that information. So you need to do that if you want to provide a routing to the Lightning Network and be a fully validating and forwarding node on the Bitcoin network. So definitely check that out. That's The Crypto Economy on YouTube, too. Let me check real quick just to make sure I don't get that right. I'm Guy Swan. It's cryptoeconomy@gmail.com, though, is the email address. But you can find me at Guy Swan's channel. I have 15 subscribers, 1 week old video. All right, guys. Also, don't forget to check out cryptoeconomy.life and make sure you change that Amazon link to my affiliate link if you want to support the show. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. And I will catch you all tomorrow. Oh, before I forget, a shout out to Nunya Business, who has the does the Bitcoin And podcast. He sent me some Bitcoin, sent me like $10 over Cash App, which I did not even realize that you could withdraw from Cash App yet, that you could send it to other addresses. I thought, if I'm not mistaken, when I first purchased on it, I don't think you could do that. I think you could only go back and forth between dollars. So that's really cool to know. And thank you so much for the donation, man. both with that and the information now that I can withdraw from Cash App. So I will be trying to use that one far more often because it's just so much easier and less of a headache than Coinbase. And Coinbase also has the problems with not wanting to be a good custodian in the network and constantly adding shitcoins to their platform without ever using or without ever doing SegWit and still being a bandwidth hog on the blockchain. So yeah, I would rather not support Coinbase if I have the opportunity to do so. That will close us out. Thank you so much for listening, guys. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and share it with all of your friends in the Bitcoin and cryptocurrency space if they want to hear read aloud all the amazing work from hundreds of different authors in the cryptocurrency space. All right. I will catch you all back here tomorrow with another episode of the Crypto Economy Podcast. Take it easy.